Welcome to the Athlete's Record, where athletes share an honest and inspirational account of their sporting life, the things that matter most to them, and what they learned along the way. The Athlete's Record is brought to you in partnership with Lifestyle Sports, Ireland's leading sports retailer. Whether you're a novice runner or an established pro, Lifestyle Sports has all the gear you need to help you train faster, further, and stronger. In this episode, we meet Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. Three-time Olympic champion and nine-time world champion, Shelly-Ann shared with us what inspired her to pursue her sensational sprinting career, from the work ethic she learned from her mom to watching the Jamaica women's 4x100 relay team triumph at the 2004 Athens Olympics. It fueled her determination to make the Jamaican Olympic team for Beijing in 2008. But not everyone was initially supportive of this exciting new talent who burst onto the scene at the Jamaican National Trials.
You kind of draw inspiration from what's around you, and that's my mom, you know. She would always say, oh, she used to run when she was small and she got pregnant young, so she never got to fulfill that dream. And that's the person who I looked up to, because she was always hardworking and committed and always on the hustle. And then I remember I went to Champs when I was in high school. My first year at championship was like 2000. And I remember seeing all these athletes that I heard about or I saw on the TV before, and I was mesmerized by them. And then I think it all started for me when I watched our girls running the relay at the Olympics. I think we won the gold at that Olympics. And I remember just running through my yard at that time, just screaming and hitting the wall and hitting the fences because I was so excited. And I think that's where kind of more passion started for track and field. And I was just inspired by that effort for the girls at the 4x1 relays. I just wanted to make the team, you know. I wasn't thinking of anything else. I was just wanted to make the team. I wanted to go to the Olympics. That's kind of like the dream for most, if not all, athletes, you know. They want to get to an Olympic Games. And I remember going to the championship, and I remember running the first round, and I felt as if I ran too hard at the first round. And I remember going back, and my coach was like, what happened? And I'm like, I don't know, why did I run so fast? And I'm like, it's like, do you know that everybody was gonna go back to the next round? I'm like, no, I didn't know that. And it's like, yeah, so you kind of wasted your energy. So, you know, at that moment, you were inexperienced, you were fragile, you know, yeah, you're young, but at the same time, I still kind of know what I wanted, you know what I mean? And I made a team. I came second, and I was so excited. My family was in the stands. I was like over the moon. You know, I thought my second place was like a gold medal for me, because I'm like, yeah, I made a team and I'm excited and I'm going to Beijing. And then everything kind of just started to get confusing and worrisome and fearful when they said that, you know, they were considering to take me out. And I'm like, what? I earned my spot. I know what the rules, you know, I that time was reading the rules, and the rules explicitly stated that the first two, you know, were automatic, and the next place were, you know, it was up to the federation to decide on that. So I was like, I'm not coming out. You know, this is when the Waterhouse side of me was coming out, because I'm like, I'm not coming out. I'm not coming out. And then they started to watch my competitions after the national championship. And it kind of added a little more pressure to me, because I was now forced to, every single time I get on the track, I had to perform to show them I deserve my spot, which I thought, you know, was stupid, because I am prepared to peak at a championship when it's championship. And then I go back into loading phases of training. So how are you expecting me to have peak performances every single meet if I'm going to compete at the Olympic Games? And, you know, I think it was definitely stressful. And I think my coach and my friends and teammates definitely offered support in that moment, because they were like, they can't take you out. If you're out, we are out, you know. We are not running. And I kind of had that support, and that made me feel good to know that whatever it was, my teammates were going to support me and my family. And I think they had a poll on the TV back home. I was in Europe at this time. And my husband called me and he was like, oh, they had a poll on the TV. And he's like, they voted against me. Everybody was like, she needs to come out. And he said, the persons who voted for me were like my friends. He's like, they're definitely friends. Who voted were your friends? And I was like, what? So a lot of Jamaicans voted for me to come out, you know. And I think I've always had that relationship. I think I'm loved here. I'm loved at home. So I don't hold it against them, because I understand. I kind of do. Looking back, I understand where you have this athlete that's doing so well and have represented us so well from the junior stage to the elite stage. And, you know, you're frightened of anything else, because you're so used to this athlete and she produces. That's not even a question, you know. So it's frightening to know, oh, can we send somebody else other than her to represent us? So I get that. And it's because of fear and of just the unknown. But I was glad when, you know, mentally I had to just, yeah, there are moments I did cry at home. You know, I was like, oh, they're going to take me out. I remember having a bad race, and I was like, I swore they were going to take me out after that race. And I'm like, they're definitely taking me out. But I'm glad, you know, at the end of all of that, I got the chance to represent, because I believe you get no more experience than if you show up and do what you want to do, because you have earned that spot. And I went out and I showed up, and I remember making the finals. And I went in the cubicle. They had a bathroom outside the track. And I remember going in there and I cried so hard because I was so nervous. I was like, I didn't want to fail, because I felt like if I failed, then those persons who voted against me were like, yes, I told you to take her out. She wasn't ready. She wasn't experienced. So all of that definitely played on my mind. But at the same time, I was also very fearless in the fact that my goal was to make the finals, to be honest. That was the goal, and I accomplished that goal. So I felt accomplished within myself when I made the finals. And I never had any burden in terms of expectations. I remember when my coach said to me that, you know, if you win, they're going to celebrate and they're going to jump. But they'll be like, oh my God. If you lose, they're going to be like, oh, I never expected that anything anyway. So it's like, forget about that, you know, just focus on your race and execute your race. And at that moment, I forgot about everything else. And I kind of like, I'm just going to enjoy the moment. And I went out all smile, braces on, and just excited and electric and ready. Because I was like, I had nothing to lose. You know, everybody else had a name, you know, they were known and all of that. Nobody knew who I was. So it gave me a little bit of the edge to kind of relax and run that race.
There goes Fraser. Fraser, and on the inside, Simpson. Simpson, Fraser coming away, and she's going to take the goal. Fraser gets it. Simpson gets the silver. Stewart gets the bronze. 10.78. She promised it. She delivered it. It was a sensational run. 10.78. The wind absolutely non-existent.
You know, I just speak to the fact that you have to give persons or people a chance to prove who they are. You can't just go off what you think you know, because sometimes we don't know everything. We think we know everything, but we don't. And you just have to give, you know, persons the opportunity to show you what they can do. And that's the only way you get experience, you know, and I'm glad I had that opportunity. I'm glad that 5% that voted for me to stay voted, because that 5% gave me confidence, right? I'm glad I never allowed the pressure to get to me. I'm glad I never allowed it to make me a bitter person or angry or, you know, all of that. But instead, I used it as motivation and a stepping stone to everything that I've been able to accomplish since that time. It's hard to explain when you cross the line and you see yourself and you know that you're the champion. It's so instant. Everything is so instant. The emotions, everything, that flash, it's almost like you get a flashback of all the work, the commitment, the sacrifice that you have, you know, you gave. And then the moments that you were dreaming, you actually start to live that dream out loud. And it's so hard to explain, but it's mind-blowing. Something that was a dream or faith, if it was like a faith, to see it unfold in front of you, is you have to actually be in that moment to experience the tingling and the sensation and the, you know, the energies that you feel when you cross the line, and it's magical. For me, it's a combination of all the hard work and the sacrifices and everything that I've been able to endure throughout the process, the defeats, the, you know, the losses, the wins, the pain, the tears, the laughter. It's everything compiled together to make it one beautiful ending.
Following her incredible Olympic success, the world wanted to know where this new sprint sensation had come from. Shelly-Ann had grown up in the tenement yards of Waterhouse, Kingston, Jamaica. Here, she tells us about the role her faith in God and the support from her family played in giving her belief in herself and helping her to deal with the challenges of growing up in an inner city community.
Growing up in Waterhouse was very difficult because you have so many influences that are not necessarily good that you may eventually follow if you want to, because there are so many of those influences, you know, and not a lot of positive reinforcement or, you know, positive life actions that you would want to follow. And you find that you are in the middle of good and bad, you know, choices. Or do I go to school or do I stay home and hang out with my friends on the corner? Do I stay in school and focus on school, or do I, you know, drop out of school and become pregnant or whatever it is? There are so many routes you can take living in an inner city, because a lot happen in an inner city. You can turn to crime, or you can decide, okay, I'm going to church instead with my friends. You have the option, and sad to say, you have a lot more bad options than good. You have a lot more negative, you know, reinforcement than there is positive. And that's what it is, because everybody's trying to fit in on what they think is okay. There's not enough persons that are going to tell you, okay, you need to move beyond your current situation and you need to come out. My mother was like that, where she was like, you can't come and be like me and stay in the same situation, because it's almost like you're perpetuating a cycle, and a cycle that's not going to help anybody. Because if my mom got pregnant when she was young and she had, you know, she have three kids, and the three of us decide, okay, we are not going to school, or we're not, then, and I decide to have a kid of my own, then that cycle continues and it doesn't help anybody. We're stagnant. We don't grow from a situation like that. But, you know, it's always easy to choose the wrong things if you are in an environment that fosters it, that makes it good, you know, or makes it enjoyable, where everybody wants to be a part of, or maybe going to the dance. Persons go to the dance and still work and achieve, but not a lot of them. And I didn't want to end up in a situation where I took a chance that way, because I may take a chance doing something and end up being stuck in that rut and not making it out. So I always chose the right way, you know, even when it was difficult. I went against, you know, the norm. Okay, going to the dances or hanging out with my friends on the street, or, you know, just participating in things that were not going to help me to move beyond my circumstance. And it's hard. I'm telling you, it's very hard, especially if you're poor and, you know, you find that a lot of the kids in the community, they don't have anybody to look up to. They don't have any family that, oh, I can move and go live with this family out of the environment a bit to kind of refocus. It's not that. It's what you live every day. I slept on one bed with my two brothers and my mother. It was four of us on one bed, and it was hard. There are a lot of times you had men walking through my house or our yard with guns because they're participating in crime, and you just had to be quiet. Can't say anything. Do you want to continue to live in that lifestyle or that environment? No, you don't want to. So you try to make sure that you stay on the straight and the narrow. And I'm glad that I had guidance. You know, my mother gave the best advice or guidance she could, given where she was. You know, I got guidance from my church because I was always going to church. Find another avenue, another set of friends to influence my decisions. You know, I also, a lot of times I had to stay with other friends at different homes because the environment was just not conducive to, you know, to what I was doing or where I wanted to go. A lot of times my mother couldn't afford to have me stay there because we didn't have any food or she didn't have any money, or she herself got into some argument or altercation and I couldn't stay there. So it was a lot of things. So it's not somewhere that every child wants to grow up. Yes, I love my community because we try. They try. You have people who try. But some try and they're still stuck there because of the environment, you know. So it's very difficult, and I'm glad that I'm able, you know, to, I moved beyond the environment and the situation, but I'm still a part of the community because I still believe that there are gems and there are young girls and boys that deserve to see me and to know that, you know, here is Shelly-Ann. She made it out. She made something of herself. She is giving to society or Jamaica in a positive way. I want to influence Jamaica in a positive way. I want to be like Shelly-Ann. So that's why I'm so passionate about community and being a part of my community and being involved, because I know what it means. If I was, when I was young, I was seeing five or three persons in my community that was constantly coming back and giving back and stuff like that, maybe I would draw more inspiration, but, you know, we didn't have a lot of it, and that's just the truth.
But Fraser Price on the near side, and the Olympic champion defends. She defends the title. Wonderful run by Shelly-Ann Fraser Price of Jamaica. And it's 10.75. Wow.
My grandmother was a treasurer. Or no, she's the secretary at her church. And I live in what we call a tenement yard. So we have like six or seven houses that is on, we're on one land. So my grandmother is a Seventh-day Adventist. So I remember from a very young age, she was always a praying woman, always praying in the morning, praying in the night, praying for us. Anything that we had to do, she would pray for us before we do it. So that is how I grew up. My mother, the same thing, right? So every Saturday, we had to go to church. It was no if or we had to. And I would have to carry her bag and go to church. And we were always in, we call it Sabbath school. And we had to sit out there and we had to go up to say our memory work or what we learned in the class. And my grandmother was a secretary, so she sat at the top. So whenever she sat at the top and we had to stand up in front of the church to say our memory work or what we did in Sabbath school, she wanted to know if I was listening and if I was going to get it right. So I always had that kind of pressure from when I was very young. And, you know, and whenever I didn't get it right, occasionally I didn't get it right, she would say I wasn't listening in church and I didn't listen this and I'm not listening. And she was always counseling me. So I think that's sort of where my faith foundation started, is from going to church every Saturday with my grandmother, And she was always praying for us. It was always something about God. She would always be talking about God. So it's kind of like an experience that you lived. And then when I started to go do track, and I had to go to high school now, I would have to go track meets on a Saturday. So she said to me, okay, you can't go to church on a Saturday. You have to go to church on a Sunday. So I started to go to Sunday's church. And then that's where everything kind of, you know, was there. And I knew that with my circumstances and where I was and how difficult it was, that my faith was all I, you know, it was all I had. You know, it was almost like I have all these promises that God spoke about me and the things to come and the things to look forward to, that I likened it to my life. Like, okay, then this situation that I'm currently in is difficult, it's hard, but it's not going to last forever. You know, it's going to get better. So I used that became like a crutch to hold me up, you know what I mean, and give me that hope and that inspiration to know that when everything else fails, God never fails. And if you hold on to those faith and your promises that God spoke about you, then there is a light at the end of the tunnel and you just have to believe it. And from I started going track now at elite level, I realized that all things work together for good for them that trust and love God. Even the good things and the bad things, they work together, because here I was coming from a poor situation where, yes, I grew up poor. I didn't grow up with my father. I had one room. I didn't have a bathroom was outside. I didn't have a kitchen. I didn't have internet. I didn't have all of that. But then here I am years later, because I believed in all those promises and I had faith and I trusted that God was going to do something great for me later on if I just continued to, you know, just work hard and to believe it would happen. And here I am now chasing an Olympic title. And out of that bad situation, here is some good. So even when, you know, things seem as if it's not going to work out or it's not working out in your favor, you can always trust that somewhere along the line it's going to turn it around and it's going to work for your good. So I kind of trust in that, because I know that, you know, He is all there is and He exists solely to strengthen me and to give me courage and to, you know, to guide me and He said in His word that He never leave us nor forsake us. And I believe that even when it gets hard. But He's still a good God. You know, a lot of us go, oh, these bad things happen to me. What have you got? He's there. You know, He's working it out. There are so many things that happen because of the choices that we make. But it works out. And I kind of trust that. And even in my competitions and I'm getting ready to run, it's always His will, because I know that His will is greater than what I can imagine. You know, He knows why. Oh, today you're coming second, tomorrow you're coming first. He knows why, you know, and God is not a magician. You know, He's not a God because He gives us things. He's a God because He's a good God, and He has guided and He has protected and He has blessed. He gives, He takes. And that's the kind of God that He is. But at the end of all of that, He has shown me or made me aware that it's not the things that are important. It's more the journey and who you impact and the lives that you impact and the things that you do with the things that He has given me. And that's the blessing in it all. So when I cross the line and I win a race, it's consolation to all the other things that He has given me and the journey and the persons who need some upliftment and to know that, you know what, life may be hard now, it may be difficult now, but trust that you will get better. And today may not work out the way you want it to, but tomorrow it gets better. And kind of what my life is and what faith and track is for me.
Now known worldwide as the Pocket Rocket, Shelly-Ann stayed true to her promise of giving back to her community by setting up the Pocket Rocket Foundation, which through fundraising and donations provides academic scholarships for young student athletes in Jamaica in all sports disciplines, supporting their education alongside their athletic development.
Yes, my foundation is I hold very dear to me, because it's about building a legacy that will exceed me, you know. And I think when I go into my community and I do, whether it's my six-a-side competition or my Christmas treat or my resource center, I want to feel connected to the people in my community, because that's where I'm from. That's where I grew up. So I kind of, I empathize, because I know what the environment can be like. I know how stressful and how confusing it can be for a young girl or a young boy in a situation trying to find hope or a way out. So when I invest in my community, I'm invested in my community, because I believe that they want just a seed. They just want a seed of hope, a seed of belief that I believe in them. And here is access to opportunity. And if I can give them access to opportunity, then they know, okay, then I care. And I want to see them transition from that, you know, environment. And I want them to also, if you help more and more move beyond that circumstances, more go, a lot more go back. They go back. And then it's almost like a situation where, I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. You know, when they spoke about, you know, history, we'll talk about Harriet Tubman, or she goes and she frees some of them, and then they go back and they free. So it's kind of like that. You want to have more persons coming out of the situation so they can go back and carry more persons out. And then if we're fortunate enough to have a lot of persons coming out of an environment, then we can change that environment for the better.
Park, can Britain hold on? Look at Shelley Ann Fraser Price, like a steam train, express train, gets it on the line.
Shelley Ann's incredible performances over her career have drawn much praise from the athletics community, including former Olympic champion Michael Johnson, who describes Shelley Ann as the greatest female sprinter of all time. Shelley Ann describes what it's like to be the focus of such adulation, and the new motivation that came from being a mom to her son, Zion.
Sometimes you're like, wow, you're still in shock. I think it's almost like a shock, but also you feel kind of proud. You're very proud of the work or the body of work that you have been able to achieve. And I think for Michael Johnson, I've had back-to-back Olympic titles, world records, and all of that. I haven't gotten a world record yet, but that's on the list. But yeah, it feels good to know that a dream that started out with me possibly not being a part of a team or going to an Olympics is here, where persons are considering me, you know, to be one of the greatest or the greatest female sprinter. It's humbling also, because you know, you don't take it for granted. You know, it's all about persons you inspire, to know that you too, it's crazy that, you know, I'm from an inner city, you know, the chances of me making it out are very slim, but I made it. I almost got kicked off the national team to represent my country at the Olympics. But here am I. I kind of fought through all these adversities, and here I am. It shows strength, you know. It's strength, and it's power, and it's courage, and it's discipline, and it's perseverance, and it's grit, and all of that. That, you know, so it makes you feel good to know that you are even mentioned in a conversation like that, you know, and you're hoping that whatever it is, other persons, other women can be inspired by your story and your journey. And you feel good. You definitely feel good. You look back, and my son can look back in the next couple of years, and he's like, oh yes, that's my mom. There's something for me, a young girl from Waterhouse, to be proud of, and will outlive who I am. When I took that year off to have Zion, it was... for me, I didn't want a year off. I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. Is this the right time? So you're worried about so many things, but then you kind of had that moment to kind of reimagine and get revitalized and re-energized on what it is that you want to do. But then, you have added source of inspiration and motivation. That's my son. And also the fact that, you know, when I got pregnant, a lot of persons questioned, you know, if it was possible for her to come back, as if motherhood somehow diminishes your capabilities or, you know, some. It's hard. I'm not going to say it was easy. It was very difficult. You know, took a lot of sacrifice and commitment to actually get it done. But I think the real joy was the fact that, you know, I had this little human at home that was depending on me, and I kind of wanted to, you know, also have that story to tell him and to show him that, listen, life will get hard. You'll have decisions that you'll have to make, and you'll have to juggle two things at the same time, but it's possible to do them both with passion and grit and determination, and it can get done. And it definitely changed the outlook, where he became my biggest priority, my biggest inspiration. And I kind of became a little bit more mellow, I think. I wasn't too hung up or, you know, and I didn't get too anxious about the situation, because I had a little guy who was already my gold medal. You know, it was the biggest gold medal that I'll ever accomplish, you know, and I had that person that's going to love me regardless, and I have to take care of regardless, and I have to give my all regardless of what happens on the track. So it kind of put things in perspective that, you know, track is for a time, it's for a period. You do it with grit, but, you know, this is who I have to invest all my energy and my time and my focus in. And I think that kind of shift things a bit, where I was a lot more relaxed. So I went to train, I was focused, I was determined to get it done, but I was happy knowing that, oh, after training, I'm going home to my son, and I'm going to hug up my son, I'm going to play with my son, and I have this person that's going to be inspired by whatever it is that happens after this. I think the one thing I've learned from being an elite athlete is a lot can change in a year. You know, it's not the end. A lot can change in a year. And not everything that you see is what it is. There's more beyond that. So don't make what happened, you know, in this moment it's not final. You know, there's more to come. There's always more to come as an elite athlete. And I wish that some of the things that I know now, I knew back then, where I thought it was like the end of the world. It's not. You know, it's not the end of the world. A lot can change in a year. You can move from being considered a third favorite to being a champion. You can move from a champion to being fifth place or somewhere else. And then you can move from that same fifth place to a first place the next year. So a lot can happen in a year. So just don't look at everything as a final, you know, outcome. Just continue to work hard and believe that, you know, the next year something good is coming.
The Athlete's Record podcast is brought to you in partnership with Lifestyle Sports, Ireland's leading sports retailer. Whether you're a novice runner or an established pro, Lifestyle Sports has all the gear you need to help you train faster, further, and stronger. The Athlete's Record is produced by Record Media. Subscribe now for further episodes in the series.